The Head by E. Nesbitt, read by Roy McCready.
The Head.
When your personal appearance is best described by the enumeration of your clothes, your character by the trademark on the gilt waistband of your cigar, and your profession just anything that comes along, don't you know? You're not exactly the right man in the right place when you find yourself up to your knees in mud, your carriage with a wheel off lying prone in a ditch several fields off, and your chance of getting to the house, where a music hall star has given you an inconvenient rendezvous, less than the least crumb of biscuit you wish you had put in your pocket before starting. Maurice Deal cursed his luck in the grey of a winter's dusk. His driver had left the carriage and gone back with the horses to the inn where he had lunched. His boots were full of water, his high hat seamed and scratched by the skeleton-fingered trees that leaned here and there over the stone walls. His cigar, long since cold, its end wet and flattened and gnawed, lay foul between his lips. He threw it away. He was lost, beyond a doubt lost, on these confounded Derbyshire hills, where every field is just the same as every other field, and the stone walls have no more of individual distinction than the faint blue-grey lines of a copybook. If he had only had the sense to stay where the coachman had left him, or, better still, at the inn down in the valley where the station was, where there were lights and voices and things to drink. Totty DeVere, the star on whom hung all the hopes of his newest venture, a company promoting Café Chantant in Manchester, Liverpool and Bolton, Totty DeVere had declined to give any appointment save this. He might call on her between 6 and 7 at Sir Alexander Brisbane's, the grey house with acres of glass, 10 miles from anywhere. And he had tried to keep the appointment, tried with unreasonable determination, and there he was. Lights and voices and things to drink, to eat also, for Mr. Deal was not only thirsty, he was hungry as well and cold and lonely. He thought of the Strand and the lights of the Strand, lights from restaurants and theatres, where one smelt French cooking and the patchouli and the regalias. These were to him what, to some of us, the home pastures and the scent of stocks and wood smoke are. He had waited by the carriage till he had grown certain that all men were alike, and that his driver would, warmed and comforted in the alehouse, not be such a fool as to keep his promise and come back with a trap. He had walked up and down the road for a while, the bleak wind nuzzling in between his neck and the fur collar of his big coat, and then he had started to reach Sir Alexander's on foot, seen a light, and had been beguiled by it to what he esteemed a short cut. Even if it were not Sir Alexander's light, yet any light might mean a possible fire, shelter at any rate, from that too intimate northeaster. He was going now, difficulty towards the light. Across the fields and over the eternal sameness of grey walls, black they seemed in that sombre twilight of cold stars. Beyond the last wall was a little hill brook. He was in it almost knee-deep before he guessed at anything worse than the cold, muddy pastures. The next wall had a gate. He saw the blacker blank and made for it. His fur-lined coat caught on its hasp and ripped loudly, and his hat was struck by some silly arch or other above the gate and fell, rolling hollowly on the flags. "Damn!" said Mr. Deal. "Oh, damn and blast!" He groped for the hat in the dark dampness, found it, and then he was at the door of the cottage whose windows, all alight, had beckoned him from afar. "There must be a wedding or a wake," said he. "Copy either way." He was casually a journalist when financial enterprises were cold to him. He knocked. He had not been conscious of any movement in the house, but now he was conscious of a cessation of movement and of a silence, as though something inside the house were holding its breath.
"Who's there?"
The voice came from behind the door, low down, as though the speaker had been trying to look out into the dark through the keyhole. "I've lost my way," said Mr. Deal.
"You'll find it, some way or other,"
said the voice. "I'm very wet and tired. I should be very grateful for a night's lodging, sir." He added the sir because the note of the voice was distinctly feminine, and he saw that the door would open more readily to one whose honesty of purpose was so clear and fine that it could persist even in the face of the conviction that there was a man in the house. Mr. Deal's